It's Express Yourself with hosts T. Ramon and Sco.
Express Yourself.
It's an hour packed with guests, opinions, sports news of the day, and off-the-field issues that impact play on it. And you, the listeners, will have an opportunity to express yourself on our call-in line as well. Now here's our Express Yourself hosts, veteran sports journalists Tim Turner and Roscoe Nance.
Express yourself, express yourself, express yourself, express yourself, express yourself, express yourself, express yourself.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Express Yourself with T. Ramon and Sco. I'm Tim Turner, along with co-host Roscoe Nance. We hope to have an interesting hour in this edition of the show. We start out tonight thinking about, hey, I don't think you can overstate it, but after, you know, dinner's ready, the two most important words you'll hear out there maybe tonight is Game 7. So we have the interesting prospect of having a World Series where the home team doesn't win a single game. It's tied 3-3. Washington won all his games in Houston. The Astros won all their games in D.C. And tonight's the last game of the baseball season in Houston. And the Nats win. That's going to be what's going to happen. No home team will have won the game. That's a major storyline that's sitting out there tonight. We got another one where yesterday the NCAA said they've cleared the way for athletes finally to be able to capitalize on their images, where they can, their likenesses, their names, and that's something that cost Todd Gurley, I think, four games his last year at University of Georgia when he tried to sell an autographed jersey. And so that's something that's coming down the pike. So we're going to see how that's going to affect the lower levels of football when it seems like it's going to be bidding. These guys in major programs will probably have a leg up on monetizing their name. And with us tonight is our guest. Is now the winningest coach in South Carolina State football history, Buddy Pugh. His team had a big win over the weekend over Bethune-Cookman, and they're like in the running, in the hunt right now for the tops of the MEAC. So Roscoe, got a lot going on, man.
There is an awful lot going on, and I feel great. It's just good to be back with Express Yourself, and looking forward to catching up with Buddy. He's one of the one of the good guys in coaching, and he does a great job. And it's just a lot of interesting things going on, especially, you know, with the NCAA's, decision to allow athletes to be paid for their likeness and sign autographs and things. What I'm interested in is the trickle-down effect and how it's going to affect the lower level programs. That's going to be very interesting. So we'll see. But I mean, it's something that should have happened a long time ago. I just hope that they are able to work it out in a way that won't be too debilitating to, like I said, the lower level programs. The big boys are going to get theirs.
Right. Well, it's the stars of the big boys, because I don't think that third-string tight end from Demopolis, his jersey is going to sell too well at the outside his family in the bookstore at Alabama. So we're going to he'll have to pump his brakes. But the guys who are really showing out are going to do something. But I know we want to talk also about what's happening in South Carolina State and this the resurgent football season that they're having right now. And we have our on the line with us right now, Coach Buddy Pugh. Coach Pugh, you there?
Yeah, I'm here. How are you guys this evening?
Doing great, Buddy. How are you?
Fine, Roscoe. How are you doing?
I'm hanging tough. It's good to talk to you again.
Well, it's good to talk to you guys. Y'all got hit on some of the hot topics here recently. And you're exactly right. It'll be interesting to see exactly how the new ruling, if it ever really goes all the way to fruition, it will affect the lower level of us.
So what are your initial thoughts about it? You say if it goes to fruition, do you think it, you know, that it may not?
Well, you know, I think they really want to try to buy a little time to see exactly, you know, what some of these states are doing. They've got two or three states, I think, that are trying to, you know, kind of go off on their own and come up with rules to kind of satisfy their own constituencies, trying to maybe get a little bit of a lead in the recruiting game. You can bet that the Alabamas and the Californias of the world, you know, maybe even the Floridas that have, you know, these great recruiting bases will try to do everything they can to make themselves as attractive as they possibly can to the guys, you know, that are coming out at this point. And, you know, with the NCAA trying to keep everything kind of balanced, at least giving, you know, an equal playing field to most of the schools around the country, when you start talking about how you go out and acquire talent, then they had to react in a way where, you know, they had to at least, you know, try to get in front of the, you know, the whole process that way. So I think they'll do something, and, you know, it'll be something that'll kind of give everybody a chance to at least remain somewhat equal. I can't see the SEC or the ACC, you know, these leagues letting one school, because they're in one state and got one set of laws, you know, be a lot different than what might be in another.
Well, how do you think it's going to affect, you know, schools like South Carolina State and the lower division schools?
Well, we don't sell as much merchandise. You know, we don't have the name value, you know, because of supply and demand. We don't have the numbers of people, you know, that it will come in and buy, you know, some of those kinds of items. I think, you know, it may give a person who's a local kind of celebrity, one of your better players, you know, opportunities maybe to go out and maybe acquire, you know, work. It may help him somewhat in, you know, some of the sales kinds of professions and that kind of stuff. But you know what? You know, this is a new horizon that we're approaching here. You know, I don't know, Roscoe. I really don't. And, you know, I think we're all trying to, you know, get a grip on this thing as they and I'm telling you, I think the NCAA is the same way. You know, I think they all want to try to study this thing in a way where, you know, they get a chance to, you know, maybe see exactly how it affects us all.
Yeah. Yeah, well, all of that is down the road. But I know you got bigger fish to fry this weekend before the egg is coming to town.
I guarantee you, and boy, do they come when they come. Those guys are really impressive. And, you know, they've done a nice job in the last 4 or 5 years. We actually have Coach Rod Broadway coming to speak at our touchdown club tomorrow. And, you know, it's a big weekend here in Orangeburg. This is kind of a gift of sorts to the area, to the county, you know, to our area, you know, because we lost our homecoming date. We had a big rainstorm that came through here. We ended up moving our homecoming game to, I guess, somewhere in about the 9:30 to 10 o'clock range in the morning, trying to get in front of the rain. So, you know, we lost most of our crowd that way. So hopefully this is going to make up for some of that loss of revenue and that kind of stuff, because of the fact that we think that we'll get a big crowd this Saturday.
Well, you certainly should. So tell me, how do you deal with the Aggies? I think, you know, the first thing that jumps out at me is that stud running back, Jermaine Martin.
Yeah. Well, you know, he's a South Carolina boy. They started to acquire a good bit of South Carolina talent. A&T has been able to, I guess, maybe get a little bit of ahead of us in the recruiting game, because their scholarships are a little bit different now than some of the rest of us in our league. And, they're actually getting transfers from all over the place. They got three guys from South Carolina. They got a guy from Penn State. Now, this guy, you know, was a Coastal Carolina boy. And, you know, they just seem to have a little bit of everything everywhere. They're both their lines, they're both the offensive and defensive fronts, you know, very similar to the D1 fronts. That's why you see them going and compete pretty effectively against the East Carolinas and the Dukes of the world, because of the fact that those guys can match up in that, you know, in the trenches that way. And, you know, that's where it starts at. You know, the Martin guy, you know, is a heck of a running back, and, you know, you got to figure out how to stop him because, you know, he'll just hurt you. He'll kill you by himself. You know, if you put too many guys in there trying to stop the run, then Bell and the rest of those guys, you know, can weigh you out outside with the throw game. So you gotta pretty much play them honest, yeah, because of the fact that, you know, they're so balanced. And then, you know, on the defensive side of the ball, you know, they may be as good up front as any team, you know, in our division. They've got young outside defensive ends that can really rush the pass and can run like the Dickens. And they're big and physical inside. So I think they're the full package. And, you know, we're just trying to figure out right now how to see if we can hang in a football game. We don't have to beat them five times. You know, it's not like a series. We just got to figure out how to beat them once.
Right.
Well, Coach, it seems like, you know, the way you talk about their roster, it's as if you studied them as much as you studied your own team. And is this what a week like this, one of the reasons why you do what you do, that it excites you to be a coach in a big game like this?
Well, it does. But, you know, I think we've seen these guys over the years. So a lot of times, you know, a team is really kind of in your mind, you know, because of the previous battles that you've had. You know, as much as the fact that you going back and studying the scouting report. I didn't need a scouting report on hand, T, because, you know, I can remember some of the bumps and bruises from last year's game and who's coming. You know, you always take a note of who's coming back and who's not. So, you know, such and such and such better not show up again this year because I was expecting him to be gone this year. That quarterback comes back from last year. Hell, we got a hell of a problem.
Yes. So you show up for their graduation ceremony to make sure they're gone.
Right.
I guarantee you, it's a good thing to see, you know, some of those guys get out of there because they were really good football players, man. And you can pretty much bet that that they've got somebody just sitting back there in the back room waiting to spring on you again. So they've got some players in that program. They've done a nice job, and Sam has just continued the whole traditional sauce from Rod, and, you know, those guys seem to, you know, have not missed a beat.
Yeah. Well, you know, the Bulldogs, you know, you guys have really stepped up and played well this year, so it's not like, you know, this is a mismatch, you know, and especially, you know, traditionally, you talked about, you know, their fronts, the offensive and defensive line, but traditionally that's where you're strong at too, especially against the run.
Well, we generally do a pretty good job of finding defensive front personnel ourselves, and we've been fortunate in the fact that, you know, that we continuously seem to be able to replenish some of the, you know, really tough losses that we've had. Everybody knows of the Hargraves and Lennox and those kind of guys that we've had here recently, Joe Thomas. But now, you know, we got a couple guys up front that we really like a bunch. Rob Perry and Paul McKeever, Terrell Goodman, these guys, you know, are about as good as any defensive front guys in our league. And, you know, they really do a nice job of playing hard all the time. And, you know, that's what we got to have against A&T, because if not, then the Martin kid will kill you. And you got to have defensive front personnel. That helped us a bunch. We were able to stop the run, especially after early parts of the Bethune-Cookman game last week. And, you know, that was a big part of our plan because of the fact that we couldn't let Williams, the quarterback guy from Bethune-Cookman, just run all over the place on us, and he'd done that a time or two in the past. So, you know, that's kind of our game. You know, if we can make you somewhat one-dimensional, if we can make you beat us, you know, with what's less than your best, you know, as far as your approaches are concerned, then, of course, then you get a chance to have, you know, an opportunity to hang in there.
Well, Coach, how are your kids handling this week? I know I was looking at where you guys are going to be on ESPN3, and then the game is big enough that it's going to be rebroadcast on ESPNU. What's the mindset? Is it workmanlike? What have you seen from them this week?
Yeah, it's pretty usual. We've had, I guess now for the last so many odd years, so many opportunities to be on the different levels of ESPN and Fox and all those guys, you know, for different reasons, playing around in different leagues, you know, and being a part of their television package. That our guys don't think much of it. We practice at 6 in the morning. And you can pretty much bet that you're pretty calm and regular, you know, at that time of day. We basically trying to wake them up and get them going. So they ain't a whole lot of jumping and hooping and hollering that time of day. And there's nobody coming to watch us either, you know, at that time of day either. So it's a pretty calm setting, you know, in a way where, you know, all they're looking for after that for the rest of the day is a nap. So we are.
Well, tell us about your quarterback, Tyrese Nick, and the difference that he has made for you.
Well, Tyrese is a little bit of a younger Arkevious Williams, the young man from Bethune. He's not quite as tall, but he runs about the same. And he's gotten to the point now where I have to know where he's throwing the ball to. Now, once upon a time, he'd be throwing it around and, you know, it wouldn't necessarily be directionally deprived. It would always be going somewhere that I didn't necessarily want to go. But now he's actually got to the point now where he's a pretty well-rounded guy. And he went down for a week. He had a concussion. Oh, I guess maybe back in week 2 or 3, somewhere in that neck of the woods, and we had to keep him out for a week or so. And we started playing Corey Fields a little bit. Corey's a freshman from down the low country down at Edisto Beach, South Carolina. And he started to come around in a way where we'll play him some too. He throws it a little bit better than Tyrese, but Tyrese is, you know, is still our starter. But you'll see both guys. You see one guy occasionally. You see the other one some. And then you see both at the same time from time to time. And I wish I had this sophisticated plan on exactly when we would say who, when you would see who. But we kind of play them as we feel. You know, it's one of those kind of deals where, you know, as the game is going, we stick one guy in and take the other guy out and, you know, do whatever. So, I try to pin our guys down on exactly when we play them with which guy, but we don't know either. So we get it figured out as we go, and maybe as the year goes on, we get a little bit more sophisticated about exactly, you know, what we're trying to get accomplished.
So has a quarterback play, has that been the key, especially on offense?
Well, let's help the bunch. We were down 2 scores against FAMU late at home, and I can tell you the FAMU is really playing good right now. And our second team guy got in there and brought us back and got us ahead right at the end. Now, they drove the ball out and scored again with almost no time left to go in the game. But, you know, we've gotten a nice little pop from our second team guy, as well as the fact that Tyrese has played really well from time to time too. So Tyrese rushed last year for a little less than 1,000 yards, and you know, he was, you know, what we thought one of the better runners at that position in the league. He threw it pretty well too, but he really ran the ball well, whereas this guy, the new kid, throws a good bit.
Well, I think you know, congratulations are in order for you, even though you're a couple of weeks removed from your milestone win that made you the top dog at South Carolina State in terms of coaching victories, passing your mentor, friend, and father figure, Willie Jeffries. What does that mean to you?
Well, I guess it means that I've been around a long time, Roscoe. More than anything else. 18 years is a long time to be in one place in this profession in this day and time. And you know, it's been a lot of fun. I've had a lot of great relationships, made a lot of great relationships, had a lot of players, really good players, and assistant coaches and administrators and presidents, you name it. You know, I've gone through them, you know, in all the time I've been here. But, you know, we've got more wins than Willie Jeffries had when he was there, you know, as the head coach. But we all know that none of us replaces or ever beat Coach Jeffries, you know, anything. We always you know, sort of a, I guess maybe sitting at his knee and listening to the next thing that he's got to say. It's been, you know, a tremendous a help to me in my career that he's always been a sounding board and a mentor and an advisee, you know, for all the different kinds of moves and different kinds of things that we've done over the years. So it's been, you know, really gratifying to, you know, to have the career that I've had, but at the same time, Willie Jeffers is still, you know, the father of us all, and, you know, and we look forward to him, you know, being around and enjoying us, you know, each other's company for a long, long time to come.
Well, you mentioned the 18 years of South Carolina State. That makes you the longest tenured coach in black college football, and I believe only Mike White at Benedict has more seniority than you overall. How do you explain your longevity? What is, first of all, what has made you keep going? What do you say?
You know what? Yeah, well, the need for a job, the fact that I've got kids and wives and everybody that like to spend a lot of money. We need to keep working so that we can keep all the bills going. My oldest boy has been bouncing around from job to job. He just left Clemson and went to work for the NCAA, and he's having a ball, you know, going up the ladder. But at the same time, you know, we have to, you know, do a little something from time to time. So we, you know, so I have to keep working, Roscoe. I don't have a choice in the matter. And, you know, it's one of these kind of deals where you've got a great job, you enjoy doing what you do. I don't ever have a problem getting up in the morning and going into the office. It's always fun to, you know, to be able to go in and associate and do whatever we got on the agenda for that particular day. So that's just kind of how it works. I mean, you just kind of business as usual, and you just keep going, and the next thing you know, it's 18 years, and you can't believe it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, but the past few years, two or three years, were kind of difficult on you. Did you ever come close to kind of just, you know, walking away from it? I know there were some people calling for your head, so to speak.
Yeah, and it's still up. But if you hang around in this line of work, I heard a guy holler for Nick Saban's head, you know, after he got beat up by Clemson last year, you know, in the national championship game. So, you know, that's just part of this business, and I can tell you that I've tried to leave, I've tried to retire a time or two, especially, you know, in some of those frustrating times when things weren't going as I desired, and sometimes, you know, they talk me in the stand, and sometimes I talk them into keeping me. So, you know, it's been a little bit of a combination of all the different kinds of reasons why I hadn't, you know, been sent to the house yet. But I can tell you this, and that is that, you know, when it happens, you know, it'll be a sad day for us all. And, you know, at that point, you know, I guess we'll figure out what's next.
So you haven't thought about packing it in?
Well, yeah, you know, every day you think about packing it in, or you think about somebody packing it in for you, you know, whichever one, you know, comes first. But now it's been a pretty good deal here lately, and we started to play really well toward the end of last year. And I think that gave me, you know, as much inspiration and excitement, you know, as anything about continuing for a while. And I actually had planned on retiring by the end of last year. And my university came back to me. My administration came back to me and said, listen, you know, we think that you're close enough to breaking this record, and we don't want to hire another football coach right now. We think we don't know if we'll end up with better, you know, if we go out and find somebody. So why don't you stick around for a little while longer, and let's see if we can figure out how to make this thing work. So that's kind of where we're at. And let me tell you, I'm glad they did, because I'm happy to be here and looking forward to seeing, you know, just how far we can go.
Right.
Well, Coach, you mentioned that Coach Jeffries being part of, you know, just being an influential person in your life, and Have you made any decisions can you think of this season you've made so far was based on something you saw that he did or something he said to you?
Probably. And, you know, some of that stuff is I guess, so subliminally active in my, you know, back down in my psyche somewhere until I make some decisions based upon some of the things that he said over the years that I just don't even really realize. But I can tell you that a lot of what we do as far as how I handle kids, how I handle people, how I deal with people in general is Coach Jeffress based. And I can tell you that you can get a lot more in this world with honey than you can with vinegar. And, you know, I just kind of taken that from him over the years where if you treat people good, you know, they'll treat you that way back. And, you know, if you can, you know, you try to see if you can make everybody's day, you know, a little bit brighter.
Right.
Yeah, well, I know you've made Bulldog Nation, a lot of those people are, you know, brighten their days. And I know they're looking forward to you making Saturday an even brighter day. So, you know, good luck to you on Saturday and the rest of the season. And, you know, I'll be watching and with a lot of interest to see how that comes out.
Well, I appreciate it, guys. And let's hope that we can get it done.
Okay.
Right, thank you, Coach.
Thanks a lot.
All right, guys. I appreciate you. Thank you so much for having me.
That was awesome. And he just, you know, the humility of it all. It's no beating on the chest, no bravado, no nothing. It's like 18 years of being in the trenches with kind of like mellow a cat out. And he's he seemed very mellow, very, very much in tune to he knows what's in front of him, and he's not making a big deal out of it.
Yeah, he's really a really good and decent guy. And, you know, you like it when people like that have success.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You know, it's just, there is some justice, you know.
And indeed there is. And it's like, he almost hung it up. And the administration had the wisdom to bring him back. And you see the fruits of that decision. It's not often administrators make smart decisions when it comes to coaches.
Yeah. Well, I know, and he didn't get into this, and he probably never will, but, you know, the problems that he encountered the last 3 years or so prior to this season weren't of his making, you know, because, you know, if you recall, South Carolina State had, you know, some severe financial problems.
Financial, right. Right.
And, you know, and the state came in and, you know, they were cutting stuff left and right. And that, you know, affected him and his recruiting budget. And, you know, and that kind of, you know, contributed to A&T being able to come into South Carolina and get some of those guys, you know, that he was talking about. But, you know, he never complained about that. You know, he just, went to work every day and did, you know, what he had to do. And, you know, now I think he's being rewarded for it, you know, for his patience and his diligence and his, you know, I can't say enough good things about him.
Yeah. And I think the kids are being rewarded as well for sticking it out as well.
Right.
Because nobody likes to lose. Nobody likes turmoil or chaos. When it's like, you know, the coach who brought me in may or may not be there. And, you know, that affects me, you know, materially. But it seems like, you know, you have stability like that. It works well for them. So, you know, here they are sitting up there through 7 games. They're 5-2, 3-1 in conference, tied at second place with A&T. And I think they played one more, both South Carolina State and A&T both played one more conference game than a BCC has. So there's a lot of work to be. It's still tight. And North Carolina Central sitting up just lurking out there on the periphery at 2-2. So a lot can happen.
Right. Yeah, they say you just have to keep chopping wood. And, you know, they're going to have their hands full on Saturday. But that goes both ways because South Carolina State, you know, in Orangeburg, I mean, that's tough.
That is, absolutely, that is tough. Yeah.
And they have so much pride and tradition there. So, and A&T is, you know, they're the two-time defending champions for a reason, and you know they're not going to go down easily. So I look for a great game.
And Coach Washington will have those kids ready. You know, they talk about they're used to big games. It's when they play their preseason schedule, they seem to be always in the mix there and against a stronger opponents. So look for that to be a huge game. And there were huge games at other venues in HBCU football where down in Norman, Alcorn knocked off Southern, which was something there. Because Southern being the top team in the West and Alcorn trying to be the, you know, stay around and be the beast of the East, they had to come from behind to do it. So they ended up winning 27-13 there at Jack Spinks and Marino Chasm Stadium.
Yeah, the Braves, you know, they just seem to have it all over Southern. I think that's maybe what, five or six, seven straight times they've beaten them, and that just
right.
may not sit well with the Jaguar Nation.
Folks in Baton Rouge.
they do not like that. I mean, you know, while Grambling is their big rival, there's a special place in hell for Alcorn in the hearts of Southern fans.
For sure. I mean, it's close enough. I mean, really, it is. I mean, it's closer than Grambling.
Right.
You're talking about by miles. So, you know, it's easy. It's an easy drive up from, well, it's never easy going through the backwoods there, but it's a closer drive than it is going to northern Louisiana, the Grambling, or, you know, but having to deal with the Bayou Classic, excuse me, over there in New Orleans. But it's geographically, it's in the same realm, I put it that way. And at least Alcorn, at 6-2, they have the best record in the SWAC, and they are the only undefeated team in conference play. So they're on a 5-game winning streak, and they're poised for bigger and better things. I think they take this week off, and it gives the other guys a chance to catch up. Where you have A&M is just behind them there, and they're at Southern, and Southern's not going to be feeling too great about that because UAPB's nipping at their heels, only a game behind.
Well, you know, that's a big game because, you know, for A&M, you know, to have any hopes of overtaking they can't lose, and you know Southern can't afford to take a loss because like I said, Pine Bluff is lurking, and you know, watch out, you know, Grambling ain't dead yet.
Right. So only somebody who pretty much is like wait till next year is Texas Southern. They win this in the conference, win this on the season, and they're at Grambling. I don't think Grambling's really going to care. This may, in fact, probably, I would take a wild guess, this would be homecoming. I'm just going to throw that out. If it's not, it should be.
I remember
when you're covering the SWAC, where I looked at the schedule for Mississippi Valley State when they were struggling a little bit after Willie Totten and Jerry Rice left, and they didn't have the horses there. And I think Valley was homecoming opponent for like five teams that year. I mean, there's some guys that their second game of the year was Valley. That was homecoming.
Yeah. you know, kick them while they're down.
Exactly. So that kind of thing when you got going on. But the SWAC is interesting in and of itself. You got, you know, like I said, Alabama A&M, they want to have if they want to have a hope, UAPB is right there behind Southern. But you get Jackson State also is right there in the hunt, just lurking back there. So it's real tight on both of those conferences. So folks would be really happy that kind of football is being played there.
Yeah, but you know, I mean, it's tight, but clearly Alcorn is the class of the conference. I mean,
yeah, true.
You know, I mean, things do happen. But Alcorn is the class of the conference easily. You know, Fred McNair has really kept that thing going. You know, Jay Hobson got it started, and he has not missed a beat. Which is speaks volumes for him to be able to do that, because it's difficult to step in, you know, with a successful program and keep it going. Because, you know, in a lot of instances,
expectations are just are so high.
Yeah, and the temptation is to come in and, you know, make changes and put your stamp on things and
right.
that kind of thing. But, you know, one of the things that helped is that, you know, Fred was already there in the program, as quarterback coach, and I believe he was also offensive coordinator at one point. So, you know, he had a big role in what they had been doing all along. So that really helped the transition. But, you know, there's a big game in the SIAC.
Oh, yeah, Fort Valley State.
Does not involve Tuskegee or Morehouse.
Well, and that's a shocker. Yeah, you're right. It's Savannah State. They've come back to the fold, first year back in SIAC after spending, several years in the MEAC. They're down here. They're 5-3 overall. They have the, you know, and then they are 4-0 in conference and steamrolling everybody. And they got another, and Fort Valley State is 6-2 and 4-0. So it's for first place in the East in the SIAC. The game's at Savannah, I believe, right?
Right.
Fort Valley's at
right.
Savannah. So
right.
That's going to be a big one.
Yeah. It doesn't sound right to say that Savannah State is in a big game and has championship aspirations, because you're talking about a program that hasn't had a winning season this millennium.
Right.
You know, they haven't had a winning season since 1998.
Well, I think that's the reason why I think they came back to the fold. I mean, granted, it was as cost prohibitive to keep running up and down the East Coast and losing. Maybe if they'd been winning, it'd have made a different thing, but, you know, getting smoked, and then you go out there and embarrass yourself nationally with some of these scores and some of these 1A teams that you play. It's not really good.
Well, my question about it is, whose bright idea was that from the beginning? I mean, did they really expect a different outcome? I mean, if you're not competitive at a lower level, what makes you think you can compete at a higher level? I mean, you know, inquiring minds want to know. I mean, somebody please answer that for me.
Well, again, like I said, it's an administrative decision.
Administrators maybe need to do a better job of administrating or something, or come consult me, because I could have told them that was just a recipe for disaster. I mean, some things just ain't happening.
True enough, and I think that they is a lesson learned, and for other people who are contemplating, maybe Hampton is in the same boat. Maybe not for the same reasons, but them leaving the MEAC, going to the Big South, and we'll see how that turns out. Tennessee State, jumping, going, standing in the OVC, and you can't find them on the back of a milk carton, really, when it comes to HBCUs. Because nobody's thinking Tennessee State except folks in Nashville.
Right.
So you have to really think about some of these moves that some folks are trying to make, and I guess for the sake of trying to improve their program, but it didn't always work out that way.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's been a lot of conversation lately about A&T moving up to FBS. You know, their chancellor, president, whoever has kind of floated that idea a couple of times, you know, in the last few months. And I hope that doesn't happen, because, you know, it's nothing wrong with being, the top dog.
The big fish in the little pond there,
right,
so to
right,
speak.
Right. Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, and I think a lot of the fans are comfortable with that pond,
yeah,
as well, because you have some of these natural rivalries, and you have some of these relationships and games you look forward to, that you're going to miss because you have to play another kind of schedule. And that's not something, you know, everybody's readily to buy into.
Right.
I thought it was interesting what Coach P said about the NCAA, because it's like it's not something that's instantaneously happening right now. And really, I think from a coaching perspective, I don't think there are a lot of coaches out there right now giving that much oxygen. They pretty much are locked in on what they're trying to do with their season this year and how that impacts them. But it is just something to think about. Where it's like for all, this is not just for football; it's for all sports.
Right.
And I'm sure that what is it, Ed O'Bannon was the first guy to really push for this and really make a big deal out of it. And, you know, he's like the Kurt Flood of college sports now.
Yeah. You know, and people have I'm not gonna say forgot him. They probably never knew of him. You know, even though he was a fine basketball player at UCLA, but you know, he really set this thing in motion, and that was a lot of years ago. But it finally is happening, and I'm really uncomfortable with how it's going to affect, you know, the lower division schools.
You're uncomfortable. when I saw the headlines, I said, okay, these programs are toast. Anybody that's struggling is going to struggle more or be extinguished. If you don't have a really strong fan base and people that are going to support it through those jerseys, you know, not so much the jersey buyer, the talent pool is going to dry up. You know that's going to happen.
Yeah.
These kids are going to be thinking about marketing and their name and getting themselves out there. It's going to be the name on the back of the jersey being as important, if not more important, than the one on front.
Well, you know, I mean, it's bad enough already, you know. And when you add money to the mix, I mean, wow. And, you know, you have these, you know, well-heeled boosters who, you know, are willing to pay exorbitant amounts for an autograph.
To win.
You know.
Just to get the jersey.
I'm an Alabama booster. How much would I give to a for his autograph?
I'll probably give him a $7,000 for his autograph, $10,000 for his autograph. It may be enough to buy him a car.
Yeah.
Your autograph was worth $40,000 to me as a booster for the University of Alabama.
Yeah.
Or some kid could be recruited for the high school and say, you get there, you wear number 15, and we'll buy your jersey. Next thing you know, there you go. And I can see where they could really go down a bad place where
very
if something goes sour.
And very quickly.
Something goes sour. There's going to be a lot of more, you know, the investigative unit is going to have to have a lot of work on its hands.
Okay. Let's flash back. Tim Tebow.
Okay.
He was at Florida.
Right.
How much do you think he could have made?
If you ever looked at one of those games when he played, there was not another jersey number in Gainesville except for 15. The entire stadium was wearing 15 jerseys. So,
Right. Yeah,
you're talking about 80,000 people. Even if they sold it for $1 a jersey, you know, that right there is massive.
And think about this. You know, you have the home jersey, you have the road jersey, then you have the alternate jersey.
Right. Yeah, and triple that. So that's $240,000. And I'm just saying $80,000. It could be $90,000, but 80 of them had his jersey. Go ahead.
That's just the jerseys. You know, we haven't talked about the posters.
Right.
We haven't talked about autographs. We haven't talked about T-shirts. We haven't talked about
cups.
Wristbands. We haven't talked about shoes. You know.
Right. So that you know, the long snapper on LSU will not be having to deal with these issues. But but there's the quarterback will. He's having an outstanding season. He's probably even in the Heisman hunt. We'll have to do that. You got LSU now the number one team in the nation, and Alabama number two. And I think, I don't know who's off this week, but the next week at 3:30, it will be LSU and Alabama playing each other. And this is not a gimme. It's not something where Alabama can say, yeah, we always beat LSU. That's not the case this year.
Well, they can say it. They can say it.
Right.
They can say it, you know, and that might be their edge, you know, that little bit of air of confidence put on. And the game is in Tuscaloosa, right?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Afternoon game in Tuscaloosa, and it's mind-boggling to me, the importance of a game like that, because really the national championship very well could be on the line right here, because the winner of this game goes up in the West, and they're pretty much it's on lockdown unless Auburn rears its head and does something the rest of the way. This is essentially for the SEC West championship. And then you got, I think, is Florida in the driver's seat in the East, in the SEC? I think that's what the case is. And I think Georgia and Florida, do they meet this weekend in Jacksonville? Georgia was off last week. So I think the world's largest cocktail party is this week. So Georgia's season's on the line this week. These are some massive games that are going on in the SEC. It's going to be great college football. And I guess I haven't been paying attention, but when did App State move to D1? And how do they how are they number 20 in the nation?
They made that move a few years ago.
I'm like, oh my gosh! I keep thinking about them beating Michigan a million years ago when they were in the FCS school. But they're number 20 this year in the poll, which kind of took me aback there. And Kansas State's ranked.
But see, App State, schools like App State, Troy, you know, they had a plan for moving up. You know, I mean, they took it, you know, a step at a time. I mean, Troy, I remember when Troy was in AIA.
Goodness.
But they were a strong NAIA program. Then they moved to Division II. They won national championships at Division II. Then they went to 1AA FCS, and they were strong there. So, you know, it made sense. But, you know, you just can't, you know, make those kind of moves all willy-nilly and think that you're going to be successful.
True enough. You got to have a mindset. I think the same thing for Central Florida, as they made progress year after year after year. This is the first year in who knows when that they've been awful. And they're not in the top 25, but nonetheless, they did it right. I mean, enough where they were playing in the Citrus Bowl. They had enough where they have their own stadium on campus, which is incredible.
South Florida is another example of that. You know, I recall when all they had, their football program consisted of coaches in trailers. And, you know, Lucius Selvin was going around as a front man to raise money for that program. But, you know, they got it done. And that's the thing that, you know, whatever you're going to do in college athletics, it takes money. And it takes, you know, big money.
Commitment by everybody, yeah.
Right.
Big money, you got to find donors to do it. You got to find commitment. You got to find folks who are going to stay with whatever plan you have and not bail on it. It's something that, you know, people, when you see folks do it right, it's a wonderful thing. It's a beautiful thing. When you see folks do it wrong, where they, like, i.e. Savannah State,
you have to have
it's a cautionary tale.
You have to have commitment and vision. You have vision, you know, and if without those two, you know, you're pretty much doomed.
Absolutely.
And, I hate to say this, but for the most part, HBCU leadership lack vision. For the most part, they lack vision.
Is it because they don't have a long leash themselves relative to their careers at these various institutions? It's like, I don't have time to watch this thing to fruition. I don't have 4 years to watch it bloom. I got to have something now.
Perhaps, but what do you have now? You know, you need to, at least put something in place, get something started, and you have to be able to sell your vision, get people to buy in. And I think, that is a problem. Dennis Thomas, the MEAC commissioner, with the Celebration Bowl, it took him, I dare say, 10 years to get that thing off the ground. He talked about it. He preached. He sold it. He, did whatever. For a good 10 years, and it finally happened. So, that's what's needed. That's what's needed, and it's not a whole lot of Dennis Thomases out there.
And when you have a Dennis Thomas, you thank the Lord.
Yeah.
that's the case. It's a thing of beauty when it works and it goes well. I want to switch gears for a taste if we got maybe a couple of minutes left here. The NFL, I think where were you going there? The trade deadline is fast approaching. Folks are thinking of different moves, but there's one team out there that seems like, no matter what, everything they do comes up gold, and that's the New England Patriots. Is it fair? These cats always are just the class of the NFL.
Well, they're the class of the NFL for a reason. It doesn't just happen, They put in the work, and they have good people. They do their due diligence, and they have a plan, and they stick to that plan. They're not all over the place. And that makes a difference. That makes a big difference.
There's a sense of continuity there between owner, head coach, and quarterback. They're doing it really well there. You got San Francisco with Kyle Shanahan. I'm not going to say it, but Falcons haven't been the same since he left, nonetheless. Kyle Shanahan 7-0 in San Francisco. They're, two games, I think, or a game and a half ahead of the Seahawks at 6-2. And you can't say enough about the job Teddy Bridgewater did in New Orleans
right.
In the absence of Drew Brees. When he went 5-0, and Brees there, I'm ready, and he played last week. And so Teddy goes back to the bench, and you sometimes wonder what possessed New Orleans to make Bridgewater the highest paid backup in pro football.
Is vision and a plan.
Yeah.
You look around the league, and how many teams have quality backup quarterbacks?
They don't.
Probably,
there's always a deficit.
A drop off. Probably one. And that's the Saints.
Right.
Now, the Colts have proven that they had a quality backup in Jacoby Brissett. When Luck retired. But beyond that, it's a joke. But as far as that goes, how many teams have quality starting quarterbacks?
We saw that in Cincinnati right now with the Bengals. I think this week Andy Dalton's being benched after leading his team to an 0-8 start. The Dolphins aren't benching their quarterbacks, but he's 0-7. So all these guys are, you look at this now, the tanking for Tua tour.
Well, you know, anybody that's tanking for Tua is asking for trouble. I mean, okay, let's face it. What happened to him last year? He got injured.
Right. He's hurt again this year.
Right. And I just think that he's always going to be a guy who has ankle problems. No, that's just my personal feeling. I'm not a coach. I'm not a scout. I'm not a personnel kind of guy or anything like that. But just, you know, I dare say I've seen more football than 98% of the people in the world. And, you know, what I see in him just doesn't bode well for the future. And plus, you know, I know the game is changing, but he's undersized. And, you know, this might be the biggest shortcoming of all in my mind. He's left-handed.
Oh, man, come on. Come on.
Think about it. How many truly great left-handed quarterbacks?
One. One that comes to mind immediately. That's it. Ken Stabler. That was it.
Okay, Ken Stabler.
Not Boomer Esiason.
Ken Stabler and Steve Young.
And Steve Young. Steve Young, Hall of Famer.
Right.
Steve Young. And Ken Stabler, Hall of Famer.
Right.
No, not non-Hall of Famer, Boomer Esiason.
You know. And you know what they say about left-handers?
What do they say?
Well, they say that everybody is born left-handed, but the smart ones outgrew it.
Dang. Okay, see?
Now, I didn't say that.
That's cruel.
That's what I'm told.
That's what I heard. Okay.
That's what I heard.
Well, hopefully these guys aren't.
That's the word on the street.
Hopefully these guys aren't tanking too hard for Tua, because you got, I mean, it's going to be a really great weekend football in the NFL. You got the closing it out Sunday night will be the Patriots at the Ravens, which is going to be really something to see. And you got the Colts and the Steelers, which is a better game than people thought, because the Colts, believe it or not, at 5-2, are leading their division. That is special. Right there. So I don't know what folks are thinking in that regard. And then I think you got the Browns, and maybe the games they were going to have as a doubleheader game are sticking it up right now. You got the Packers are playing at the Chargers. The Chargers just fired their offensive coordinator yesterday, Ken Whisenhunt, although they're still pretty much still in the hunt, because the AFC West is not any good. The Chargers are still in the 3-5, but they think they should be better. And the other game that should be the doubleheader game is the Browns, which have been vastly, vastly underachieving by the media. They're at the Broncos, a team that, you know, Joe Flacco dogged them for the unimaginative play calling. And this week, yes, they said, you got a bad neck and you're going to be sitting out.
Don't
talk smack when you don't really have that kind of hand there, buddy. And then
Browns,
tonight, you know,
the Browns are just, they're the most overrated team since Buddy Ryan and the Jets.
Wow, that says a lot there. I understand. Mayfield stormed out of a press conference today after an altercation with a verbal altercation with a reporter. So tensions are high through 7 games, and that. They're not the juggernaut that they envisioned to be. You know, he's going to have to hold a lot more parties in the stadium with that hand vacuum in those commercials to get more attention to what's going on there.
This is from your team leader.
Oh, yeah, your team leader. The guy, he's the one throwing the tantrum. So Not a lot going on there, but a lot will be going on tonight in Houston. It's the World Series. We got the Astros and the Nats going at it, and like I said, it didn't get much better than Game 7. I think the Astros are up one nothing now. Gurriel has hit a home run off of a Matt Scherzer Max Scherzer. So it's they're taking the early lead, bottom of the third, with the Astros up 1-0. We want to thank our buddy.
The Nats got them right where they want them.
I'm sure they do. It's early. It's real early. Thank Buddy Pugh again for being with us, and we appreciate that. And we'll just have a lot more to talk about next time around. So, Roscoe, till next time.
Express yourself.
You don't never be here for nobody else. All you got to do now.